Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. It sounds like a simple idea. Ohioans should know what something costs before they buy it. But when it comes to healthcare, we often feel like we're flying blind, going in not knowing the price until after we have to pay for it. Congress mandated hospitals post their prices online. But according to a recent report, just 9% of Ohio's hospitals comply with that federal law. Now, Ohio's Hospital Association says that's inaccurate, but state lawmakers in the House passed a bill last year to toughen the federal mandate. Yet, it's getting a bunch of changes now that it's made it over to the Senate. And so we're talking about that bill, House Bill 49, and the fight for hospital price transparency this hour. Joining me first is Republican Representative Ron Ferguson. He's a co-sponsor of the House's Hospital Price Transparency Bill. That's a tongue twister. And he joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Representative Ferguson.
I'm on, Anna. Appreciate it.
I want to start with a guy from Cincinnati, actually. His name is Drew White, and he doesn't have health insurance by choice. So he's paying for all of his health care out of pocket. And he told me this story about a time when his doctor thought he had pneumonia, but wanted to take some x-rays to confirm.
So I went down and I walked into this kind of chain imaging place. And they're like, okay, great, we can do it right now and send the results upstairs. I said, well, how much is it? And it was like the intake nurse or whomever, whatever their title was, it's like we started speaking different languages. It was almost like a who's on first routine, because I said, how much is it? And she's like, oh, you don't have to pay right now. I said, well, that's not what I asked. I asked, how much is it? And she's like, well, no, you don't have to pay now. We'll just bill you. I said, yes, but ultimately there's going to be a price, and I'd like to know what that price is. And she's like, I don't think you understand. We'll just bill you. Well, you'll just get a bill in the mail. And it took, I don't know, like a comical number of iterations of that exchange for her to finally understand that I was interested in what, that I wasn't willing to proceed without knowing what the ultimate cost was going to be. And she answered that she couldn't tell me because she didn't know, that all she was there to do was to get me entered and whatever. And I said, well, who would know? And no one knew who would know, because all that was handled at a different office.
He goes back and tells his doctor, and the guy says he'll call down and get the price. You know, he's going to play the doctor card. But the doctor can't get a number either. So they decide to treat for the pneumonia without the x-rays. And as he's leaving the building, this woman comes up to him.
And she said, I'm the manager of this imaging office, and I just want to apologize for kind of the rigmarole that you've gone through. And I think it's ridiculous that somehow we don't know the price of these things and that it's not an easy question to answer. And I was hoping you'd give me your phone number and I will find out the price and I will call you. And it was literally nearly 2 weeks later when that office manager called me again, kind of apologetic. And she said, I just managed to find out 5 minutes ago what the images cost. And it would have been $600 per x-ray.
The price seemed a little high, but the whole experience crystallized for Drew just how broken he thinks our system of buying healthcare is.
You know, that sort of really drove it to me that why can't I price shop what x-rays cost? You know, it shouldn't it be as simple as a Google search? Or shouldn't it, you know, wouldn't it be nice if these places advertised, you know, what things like that cost? And be able to make an informed choice based on that data, just like we were adults.
Final question for you, Drew. If you had known the price ahead of time, would you have had the x-ray?
No. No, not for $1,200. I would have gone somewhere else.
You know, Ron, it's a really good question that Drew asks. And I think it's one all of us have asked at one point or another during our interactions with the healthcare system. So, Representative Ferguson, can you answer it for Drew and for me? why can't we see the prices for different healthcare services ahead of time?
I think that I have that same question, and so do millions of Americans. And that's why we're having this conversation today, is we have people that have, nearly everybody has had an experience in the hospital system, and we don't have these prices. So what I would like to see is exactly that, so that you can make an informed decision, much like you could tell that Drew was trying to make.
So tell me about your bill, House Bill 49. How would the version you guys passed out of the House fix the problem?
Yeah, so in a situation like Drew's, it would require that hospitals maintain and make public a list of standard charges for all hospital items or services. Sometimes you hear a little bit of pushback in an emergency situation. Well, you know, if you're in a car accident and it's an emergency, our bill does not require the hospital to share that price, because of course, a patient isn't going to be making a decision when you're trying to save their life. But in a situation like Drew's, where you actually have the luxury of being able to shop around the prices, we should be able to help make people make good informed decisions so that they could possibly save some money, because medical debt can really be crippling to people.
So the federal government passed a law to do this and it went into effect in January of 2021. Why is that not good enough? Why not just let the federal government handle it?
Well, I don't trust the federal government to handle much, and I think that's the sentiment of a lot of Americans. But we do a lot much better job at the state level, and there's certainly a nice template at the federal level. But what our bill does is codifies those federal rules into state law, so that then at the state level, we can actually hold people accountable in this situation, of course, holding hospitals accountable to following the rules.
And tell me about some of that ways that your House bill would hold them accountable, because that's where this really does diverge from federal law. You've got bigger penalties, you know, bigger punishments, I guess, bigger sticks for noncompliance.
Yeah, so certainly we do have the penalties. So if in Ohio, the Ohio Director of Health would be the person who monitors each hospital's compliance. And if they are out of compliance, they would first be issued warnings and some opportunities to come into compliance. But if they fail to comply after that, then there would be fines levied upon the hospitals. And we think the fines are in line with something that, much like in the criminal system, you try to get punishments that will actually get people to follow the law. Well, we want these punishments to be for people to actually follow the actual rules. The other big thing is if the hospital is out of compliance, then they wouldn't be able to send a patient to a debt collector. If they're in compliance, they absolutely could still use a debt collector, but not if they're out of compliance.
And that's a big deviation from federal law. And the other thing comes down to this, I want to talk a little bit about estimates versus prices, because the way the federal law is structured, there's this like price tool estimator, and it has certain conditions, but it has to be posted on a hospital's website. But your bill doesn't use that. It requires something firmer, right? Like a little harder price.
Yes, exactly. What we're looking for is a machine readable file that has exactly those prices, those firm prices. Estimates are not prices. People deserve the opportunity to know exactly what something costs. You know, right now I'm looking at my desk, my computer, my phone. I know what those things cost before I purchase them. You should have that same fairness within the hospital system, that you know what something actually costs when you're getting ready to purchase it.
So your bill passed with overwhelming support in the Ohio House. Just 5 lawmakers opposed it, which is a big deal in any legislature, but I personally think it's a particularly big deal in this House, in this General Assembly, to get 90 lawmakers on board with anything. But it goes over to the Senate, and then it gets a ton of changes. What do you make of the changes that Senator Lange in the Senate has made?
You know, it certainly isn't the bill that we're looking for, the biggest one being what we just discussed previously, which is prices. The Senate bill does not require prices. It allows for estimates. That's not going to do anything to help people like Drew that we heard from earlier, or any of the other Ohioans that are listening to this that actually need the benefit of knowing what a price is so that they can save some money and they can actually shop for their health care.
We're going to hear from Senator George Lang a little bit later in the hour, but I also spoke with John Palmer from the Ohio Hospital Association, and he says that the federal price estimator tool is where hospitals have invested their dollars and that it has certain requirements, and that if we had to go ahead, or if the hospitals had to go ahead and create another tool or another list for the state law, that it would be really burdensome. What do you make of that?
I mean, I appreciate people's opinions when they come in to share this, but the reality is it's our belief and those that are within this hospital price transparency movement that the prices exist. So asking those prices just to be turned over and made public to the consumer is not unreasonable. So the data exists. We're just asking to be transparent and to show that data.
You've been quoted as saying the Senate bill, quote, will do nothing to help patients and was created with hospitals in mind. That's some pretty harsh criticism of the way that your bill has been changed. So I have to ask, if it passes the Senate in its current form and comes back to the House for concurrence, will you support it?
No, if this is the exact, if the bill that's currently in the Senate is the one that comes to the House, I absolutely won't be supporting it because I will be failing every patient that's looking for a price because this doesn't give you prices, it only gives you estimates.
What have you heard from constituents, from people all over Ohio about this effort? Because I have to imagine you've been working at this for almost a year now. So I'm sure you've had people write in or call your office.
Yes, yeah, so I've definitely gotten a lot of feedback from people that are excited and want this exact opportunity. You know, you hear from a lot of people like Drew. The first time I met him was when he came to testify, but I hear from people in my district all the time saying how much this could help them in a situation to have, you know, just financially been in a better place for themselves and their families.
You're a pretty conservative, pretty free market kind of guy. And, you know, how does this fit in? Because I do feel like having a price is a pretty essential part of the free market.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, price signals are the number one thing that you need within a free market. So that is what allows people to make a decision on if is it a service that they need? Is it a service that they want? Is it something that you want to go look for somebody else? It increases competition, and with more competition comes better quality and lower prices.
Are you hopeful that perhaps you and Senator Lang can get in a room and work together and hash out a compromise here?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm always going to be somebody that's optimistic. There's certainly been a lot of discussions around compromise, and there's a lot of things that in the legislature, that's one of the things you need to do is be willing to compromise. But foundationally, the thing that can't be compromised is that we need to have prices. Estimates just aren't going to cut it. And if we can make sure that prices are guaranteed, a lot of these other things like the penalties and such can kind of be discussed on the edges.
That's Ron Ferguson, a Republican representative from Wintersville in Jefferson County. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Anna. Appreciate it.
Coming up, we're expanding our scope beyond Ohio to the national effort to make hospitals post their prices. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about hospital price transparency this hour. The idea that you should know what it costs to set a broken bone or have a knee replaced before the procedure happens. Joining us now is National Patient Rights Advocate Cynthia Fisher. She founded and chairs patientrightsadvocate.org, a nonprofit fighting for system-wide healthcare price transparency. Welcome to All Sides, Cynthia.
Thank you, Anna. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And former Colorado lawmaker Patrick Neville, who passed a similar piece of legislation in his state a few years ago. Welcome to All Sides, Patrick.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to see you again.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I used to be a state house reporter in Colorado, so Patrick and I go back way back a couple years. So let's start with that federal law that took effect in January of 2021. What was compliance supposed to look like, Cynthia?
Well, for over 3 years now, by law, all of us have the right to know all actual prices from hospitals and insurance companies and healthcare. And unfortunately, we're seeing in Ohio, Ohio has one of the lowest percentage of full compliance in the country. Only 9% of all of the hospitals in Ohio are fully complying by posting all of their actual prices online for all patients and consumers, being businesses and unions alike, to find prices up front so they can lower their costs and save their money in healthcare.
I asked John Palmer from the Ohio Hospital Association about that 9% number, whether it was accurate.
Well, we have found that the arbiter of this process at the federal level, with being CMS, has found that in their recent reports and audits and assessments is that 70% of hospitals are in compliance with both parts of the rule, which big increase from 27% when it was initially rolled out in 2021. And so that just being 2 years ago, we feel that we are seeing a lot more movement from hospitals. But ultimately, you know, we're complying with these federal laws, but we're also working to deliver a consumer experience that truly is meaningful and impactful.
So you disagree with the 9% compliance here in the state of Ohio?
Yes, the metrics that they have opted to use aren't aligned with what is being used by the actual entity, CMS, the arbiter of the federal program.
So, Cynthia, I saw you react a little bit as that was playing. What do you make of Palmer's assertion there that this 9% number is not accurate?
Well, we agree with Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, the federal government, that over 70%, in fact, we're seeing that increasing, have actual pricing files online. However, they're incomplete or they're missing wide swaths of data or certain insurance plans that have no pricing in the fields. So in order for price transparency in a full market to work, those pricing files have to have all of the prices that the hospitals have negotiated with the insurers and that discounted cash price. I mean, certainly you can't have a functional market unless all prices are out there. So when we look at this report, we do a deep comprehensive dive and validate not only technologically, but we look at every data field to make sure prices are available. And then we compare it to the insurance industry pricing file. And when we find them in the insurance prices and not in the hospital, we know that the hospitals can do better. And so even CMS agrees that they did not do a deep comprehensive dive, and that would require further review to determine full compliance. So we're on par. I think the real issue here is when prices are out there for everyone, you could imagine going to a Google search engine and finding the price of an MRI where closer to you. So why would anyone want to pay over $7,000 for an MRI in a big hospital system when they could find a standalone imaging center that might have it available for $300? So these are the advantages because price transparency is so transformative. It unleashes competition among the hospitals, and it allows us to be able to shop up front and also be able to protect ourselves from overcharges when we get our medical bills to make sure the bills match the price, just like in any other sector of our economy.
Patrick, is that why you wanted to pass a state law in Colorado?
Exactly why. They were kind of slow to move in compliance. What my bill did was give the consumer some ability and some consumer protections. Roped in leveraging what the federal rule does. And so we see that being successful in Colorado. We were told when I ran the bill that we were going to see all these different frivolous lawsuits. We haven't seen one yet. What we're seeing is hospitals actually coming into compliance and patients that are overcharged actually have a recourse. And it's working well in Colorado. And because of that, we're actually seeing tech developers come in and develop those tools that, like Cynthia was mentioning, to actually allow people and businesses to shop for healthcare. And what we're seeing is businesses actually negotiating with their employees the ability to, if you find a lower rate, we will share that savings with you, or we will send that to your HSA in low, because they're lowering our costs as well. So it's working well in Colorado. And quite frankly, states are quicker to move to enforce than the federal government. Regardless of which party's in charge, the federal government can be slow to react, and states can do this in a much quicker and efficient manner.
Yeah, and you came all the way out here to Ohio to testify in support of just that.
I did.
So I want to ask about price variation, because I think we all understand that you could pay a different price for, say, a colonoscopy at one hospital or another. But what really stands out to me is the price variation within hospitals, depending on your insurance. Cynthia, how is it possible that, say, a C-section could be, you know, $20,000 or $2,000 in the same hospital with the same equipment? It just depends on your insurance.
It's crazy if you think about it, that the hospitals have negotiated price variation among different health plans that sometimes vary 10 times more, even 20 times more. And across the country, within the same hospital, that 10 times more is on average what we're seeing in price differences. I mean, it's outrageous. You use childbirth. Well, look at, like a colonoscopy, we've seen prices around $1,000 for a colonoscopy, and the same coding with another health plan is over $12,000. I mean, if we had this in any other sector of our economy, we would be outraged. Can you imagine it at the gas pump? If you pulled up to fill your tank of gas and the person in front of you filled theirs for the same amount of gallons for $50 and you were charged $500. No one would tolerate that. And everybody would work together to get the same fair market price. That's what price discovery, price transparency does. It will allow and unleash competition, and people will find out where they can get the best quality of care and at the best prices. And on top of all of this, it really matters to businesses, especially across Ohio. When you can see prices in Ohio, it allows businesses to save on knee replacements and put that money back into the workers' paychecks, put it back into the earnings and their growth. Small businesses really have been impacted because they've seen double-digit increases time over time, year over year, on the runaway cost of their health insurance premiums for their workers. And at the end of the day, price discovery and price transparency will allow even the premiums to come down, even that amount of coverage, when we can all see prices and be able to be protected from overcharges and lower our costs.
I also asked John Palmer from the Ohio Hospital Association about this very issue, about why there's so much price variation in what patients pay with different insurances for the same exact procedures in the same exact hospitals.
And that's just the free market we operate in, and the system that we are living in is that we have to negotiate our prices, and oftentimes we have to take the prices that are or the rates that are given to us by the plan that we negotiate, because there's hundreds of different plan options out there, just on the private side, but also on the government side. And everybody's negotiating different rates for different services that are provided. And obviously on the provider side, we have a lot of costs that go into that. And we've seen a lot of our costs increase in recent years because, one, with inflation, but and what we paid for pharmaceuticals and other general supplies. And so these have been pretty intense economic challenges that we've had in recent years that ultimately we're trying to get rates that reflect that.
Patrick, John says that it was just the free market. This is what the free market is. This is how it works. You're also a conservative guy, very pro-free market. What do you make of the Ohio Hospital Association saying that's just the free market?
Well, the problem is we have absolutely no free or functional market in healthcare because we don't have actual prices. You can't. That's a cornerstone of any free market, to actually have prices, so people can actually shop and go have competition, and then competition makes things cheaper, better, faster over time as technology advances. And we don't have any of that in Colorado or in healthcare. So that's the big problem. And what we're seeing in Colorado is we actually do have that ability to go out and shop. So one of the things too, I've seen statistics out there saying that on average, your lowest negotiated insurance price is 40% higher than the cash price. So what we're seeing in Colorado, because more hospitals are becoming compliant, is people might be on that high deductible plan and realize that if I go through my insurance, they negotiated a price, they didn't do a good job negotiating price for me. It's going to be $8,500 and I've got an $8,000 deductible. But if I go pay cash, I can just pay $500. And so they're opting for the cash price. So it gives the consumers the ability to have that choice. And I actually experienced this myself. I broke my finger. The VA going through there, they were just going to fuse it together. Instead, I found a price transparent hospital, actually got decent care, and my finger's now fully functional. So I opted to actually, instead of going for the free care, I cared about my finger. I went and paid a little more to get better care, but I had that option because I was able to see the prices.
There's been a lot of debate at the federal level between hospital associations and just all different players in this about whether this kind of transparency would really lower prices. And Cynthia, you have this great comparison that I've heard you give about how it could, and you compare healthcare to the airline industry and ticket prices. Can you tell us about that?
Well, yes. I mean, if you think about how we function in any other marketplace, we can shop online. And what happened in the airline industry in 1978, when President Carter deregulated it, and prices had been hidden. Only the travel agent knew behind the screen what the airline costs were. And they made money the higher the ticket, just like healthcare. Think about it. As long as hospitals and insurance companies hide their prices, they can charge whatever they want. But if you look at what happened to the airline industry, once those prices all became transparent and all online, we started to see price competition. And what happened is since 1978, the prices of airfare have come down in half, and hundreds of millions of people are affording to be able to fly. And by choice, they can choose their flights based upon their pocketbooks and their ability to pay. And so this has been an incredible tool that has functioned incredibly with the airlines, and it has integrity, because you would never go on an airline and expect to bill months later and not know what you were going to pay. And airlines, also like healthcare, have incredible variation in fuel costs, wind fuel, as well as people load on the plane. So those variables, just like healthcare, can be assimilated and aggregated to be able to figure out what is a fair market price and be able to price it fairly. And this is totally doable in the healthcare market. Price transparency is so transformative, because when you price this, you can cut out the many, many middle players that are capitalizing, trying to make complexity in between in all those crazy negotiations and handling of our data to maximize profits over delivering the best care at the best price to patients.
And it's not just about knowing the price before you get the IV or have the X-ray. I want to end with Drew White, who we heard from earlier. He had this other crazy experience when he asked for an itemized bill after having eye surgery. And I'm going to let you tell him what happened.
So I received the bill, and it was without context or explanation or detail at all. I think the original bill was literally almost like, I don't have it, so I'm relying on memory from some years ago, but it might have literally basically been one line, like total for services of this date. And, you know, again, I don't remember the exact number, but somewhere over $100,000. I was a little floored by that. You know, like I know surgeons make a lot of money, right? And equipment is expensive and hospitals are expensive to run. But that just seemed a staggering amount when I was in the hospital, I think, less than 12 hours.
So Drew tries to get an itemized bill, and no one answers the phone. No one responds to the emails he keeps sending. So he decides to go down to the office in person.
Once I explained why I was there, I was met with what I would almost describe as hostility on the part of the people who were working there. It was a relatively small office, and I eventually just started dealing with one guy. I didn't retain his name or anything, but I don't know how to really explain the attitude that he had, but it was like, why are you bothering me with this? Kind of, it is what it is. How, and almost an attitude of how dare you? You know, you've got an official bill, and who are you to come in here and make demands?
There was some back and forth, but the guy eventually produces a bill with a few new lines, except the details weren't really details. It would say things like medications, and then in parentheses, various, and a dollar amount. So no breaking down how long he had anesthesia, what it was for, did he have other drugs? You know, it just said medications, various. So Drew asks again, and he asks for the billing codes, all those numbers hospitals type in when they bill your insurance. There's more than 10,000 of them, and they cover everything from like individual Tylenol pills to milligrams of the drugs used for anesthesia. And they tell him that's going to cost him.
You can request that a researcher be assigned to this bill, and they will pull all of the individual codes, but you're going to have to pay for that. And I said, well, what would it cost? And I was met with this absolutely insane answer that it was some god-awful amount per page of billing research, and they wouldn't even give me an estimate of how many pages it would ultimately be. But based on a couple of the implications that he made, it would literally be hundreds or even thousands of dollars that I would have to basically kind of write a blank check for, agree to in advance that I would underwrite this endeavor for them to research their own records. And I said, well, that's nonsensical.
We're going to talk about what David White just said about that struggle to get an itemized bill coming up in just a moment. But first, I want to thank Cynthia Fisher, founder of PatientRightsAdvocate.org, and thanks to former Colorado lawmaker Patrick Neville for their time today. Coming up, our exclusive interview with the Republican senator who is making all those changes to Ohio's price transparency bill. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about hospital price transparency this hour, something that sounds simple on its face, that hospitals should post their prices so we know what we're buying and can shop around for the best deal. And yet, passing a law here in Ohio mandating just that has proved a little difficult. Earlier this hour, we heard from the House Republicans who passed their version of hospital price transparency and how they've been disappointed by the Senate changes. Now we're going to hear from the senator who made those changes, Republican Senator George Lang. Thanks, as always, for joining us, Senator Lang.
Anna, thanks for having me. Great to be here with you today on this glorious day.
Before we get into the details of House Bill 49, I want to get your opinion more generally on requiring hospitals to publish their prices. Do you support the idea, just generally speaking?
100% support the idea. You know, there is so much confusion that goes on right now when it comes to hospital pricing and just medical practice pricing for that matter. And the medical field has now grown to over 20% of our country's GDP, and Ohio is no different. It's our biggest hunk of our economy. So we have to figure out how to at least attempt to rein these prices in. And I had a personal epiphany about 9 months ago, I had a scan that was being done. And when I made the appointment, I went ahead and paid roughly a $900 out of pocket. I don't remember the exact number. And the very next day, I got a call from someone in billing who said, and if you agree to pay up front, which I guess they had not known I had already paid up front, we can save you about $500 or $600. We can get that down to the $300 to $400 range. And I told them I had already paid up front. But I asked the telemarketer that I was talking to, you know, how come you guys are even offering this? And the answer was, well, we know there are better rates elsewhere, and we're trying to be competitive. And my assumption is they would bill part or all of the difference to the insurance company. I don't know that, but that's my assumption. But I had a personal epiphany that showed me how important this piece of legislation is. And, you know, Jim Butler's been working on this for 10 years, and I've been a strong proponent of this since I came up to the State House roughly 7 years ago. And Jim actually approached me at one point about taking over the piece of legislation from him when he was term limited. But at that point, I had moved on to the Senate.
So let's get into the details, the nitty gritty of House Bill 49. You've taken a number of provisions out, and 39 to be specific, and you've added a bunch in. So broadly speaking, why have you made these changes? We'll get into some of the specific ones in just a minute. But, you know, why take 39 out? Why put like 8 or 9 back different ones in?
So there's a lot of confusion and misinformation out there about what was taken out. And we will get into that shortly. As you know, Anna, I focus on making Ohio the most business-friendly state in the nation, and the results are showing. We see not only the big guys coming back, but the little guys coming back. And two of the most important things we can do to attract and retain businesses is reduce taxes, which we are doing, and reduce regulations, which we are doing. The original version of the bill had about 300 new regulations in excess of what the federal government even requires. As we are trying to become more business friendly, not more business punitive, we make our regulations higher than what the government requires and higher than any state around us. We're ultimately going to hurt the industry, which will ultimately lead to a significant negative impact on the consumer. And some of the things that we put in there, for example, facility fees. This is vitally important that we work on facility fees. And a lot of people don't know what I mean by that. But if a scan costs, let's make a number up, $300, a hospital is able to charge $1,200 for the exact same scan that you could go to a doctor's office or an outpatient scanning facility and get for a significantly cheaper price. The reason for that is the hospital is expected to provide emergency care 24/7, regardless of an individual's ability to pay. So we recognize the need for a physical hospital facility to charge a higher fee. So that was granted many, many, many years ago before I got up here. Now, the problem comes into play if a hospital buys one of these outpatient scanning facilities or a hospital buys a doctor practice that is not part of the hospital facilities, they are now able to take advantage of a loophole and charge the higher price for the outpatient facility, which does not require 24/7 emergency care, including the indigent, or for a doctor's practice. So this has been going on for quite some period now, and we think it is adding unnecessary costs to the system. So we in the Senate want to address that. We don't mind. We recognize that a hospital needs to charge a higher fee when they are required to provide 24/7 emergency service, but not when they buy an existing practice that currently doesn't offer those needs and in the future doesn't intend to offer them.
I want to get into the crux of the disagreement. So Republican Representative Ron Ferguson says his bill, House Bill 49, was gutted and that it no longer requires prices to be posted only estimates. And he says without prices, there can be no transparency. So did you do that? And if you did that, why did you do it?
You know, I wish Ron Ferguson would actually read the amended version of the bill. If he read that, he would actually see, because his claim is this bill would require hospitals to publish a list of standard charges for their services, that we are prohibiting that. The language that we put in the Senate is actually unchanged in the Senate substitute bill. Section 3727.32 requires hospitals to make publicly available a list of the standard charges for the hospital shoppable services. This is unchanged by the Senate substitute version. Our substitute version specifies that as part of their compliance monitoring, the Ohio Department of Health can review complaints made by individuals relative to this. And we took the exact same language that they had in the House bill and put it in the Senate version of the bill.
So you're saying the hospitals would have to post exact prices, not estimates?
The hospitals would have to post exact prices. We would also allow them to use an estimator tool, and we removed the penalties for a hospital if their final price was plus or minus 5% of what the estimate was. And the reason we did
that— So that's wiggle room.
If a hospital comes in at lower than 5%, if they tell you something's going to cost $100 and it only costs you $94, why would we punish them? That's what the House's version of the bill did. There was no incentive for a hospital to beat their estimate on it. And the other issue we have with it is, you know, similar to working on your car. If you go in to get a new tire on your car and you get an estimate for the tire, and in the replacement of the tire, they say, hey, you know, you need your— now I'm not a mechanic, so pardon me if the mechanics aren't right. You know, you need to get your rims and your brakes fixed and your rim is shot. You know, the mechanic can't always tell that when he's giving you the estimate and making a look. Now, the advantage you have with the mechanic is you have time to talk to somebody before you actually do that extra work. If you are having a procedure done, a surgery done, and they discover something that can be life-threatening that they have to act on now in order to save your life, we don't want to punish a hospital because they took steps necessary to save a life. So there has to be some flexibility and some recognition of the complexity of the work that these hospitals and doctors are doing.
And I would say, though, I do think, especially for routine surgeries, they can give you pretty itemized options, right? So a number of years ago, I had an elective surgery. And when you are paying out of pocket, when there is no health insurance, they give you a very clear list of costs. And they even included contingencies, like they broke down anesthesia into 15-minute increments. So the surgeon says, we think it's going to be 90 minutes. If it's 2 hours, here's what you'll pay. If this happens, here's what this charge is. If that happens, here's what this charge is. So, I mean, obviously, doctors can't account for everything. But do you think they should be able to say, hey, we're estimating an hour? If it takes an hour and a half, here's what that extra 30 minutes of anesthesia is going to cost.
Without question, they should be doing that. And Anna, you have just proven my argument. The hospitals were already providing that information to you before this. Now, what we're going to do, if they don't provide that in the future, there are some very significant penalties that line up exactly with the penalties that the federal government would charge. And they would not be— that they would be cumulative. They would not be coincide with it, but they would be on top of the penalties. So the hospitals, assuming we get this bill passed, they better step in line or they will have significant consequences as a result of it.
I did want to ask about the fines, because you cut the amounts in half from the House's version. So, and then they were set as maximums instead of minimums. And you also changed where the money would go. So how did you land on changing the numbers for these penalties? And why would you want to create a dedicated hospital price transparency fund instead of just sending it to the general fund?
So one thing you need to keep in mind that we considered in the Senate, any penalty we pass on to the hospitals, and we want to punish them for non-compliance. We matched our penalties to exactly what the federal government does. Any penalty we pass on to the hospitals don't eat that. They don't eat it. The unintended consequence of this is the hospitals have to pass that along to everybody else in the future. So this actually, by increasing the penalties to an unfair amount, has the unintended consequence of raising the total cost of healthcare in the state of Ohio. We want to have a bill that the ultimate effect is we reduce the total cost of healthcare in the state of Ohio. And we think that by doubling the penalties that the federal government is motivation enough for the hospitals to get in line and make sure that they do that.
I will say that, at least according to patient rights advocacy groups, compliance at the national level has not been great. I did want to ask about this provision that got taken out that would have blocked hospitals from collecting on debts where the health director determined that the hospital didn't disclose its price. What was the rationale for taking that out?
You know, the rationale, we met with the debt collectors, and for the record, since this was put in, we met with Representative Barhorst, and he made some points that when we took it out, we have not, we did not consider at the time, and we're looking at putting a limited part of that back in.
Oh, okay.
The intent of this is not to forgive someone's debt. The intent of what we want to do is make sure that the hospitals complied up front. And currently, what a hospital can do, the way the current language works, Anna, is if you get notified today, let's say you had a procedure exactly 11 months ago, if you get notified today that there is a debt, the way the current language works is the hospitals can start debt collection proceedings based on when your procedure was. So you've only been notified for 1 month that you actually have the debt. In 30 days, they can start debt collection proceedings. Representative Barhorst made that clear to us, and we said, hey, now that makes sense. Maybe we need to add that back in. And the language we are considering is language that says, no, they cannot turn it over to debt collections from a period of 1 year after the patient has been notified, not 1 year of when the procedure took place. So we recognize from a business perspective, if there are people that are not paying their debts, we need them to pay their debts because, as I mentioned before, the cost of non-collection of debt, the hospitals don't need that. They have certain responsibilities. They have to care for the indigent. They have certain margins that they have to meet. I sat on the board of Mercy Hospital, who was all about the mission. And the mission of the sisters was to provide care to anybody, no matter what they needed, no matter what the circumstances, no matter their ability to pay. And the thing I learned, you can't have the mission without having the margin. It's a very important lesson. So if you have someone that's not paying their bill, we want the ability for the hospital to collect on a legitimate debt. We just want to make sure it is fair to all parties involved. And as Representative Barhorst pointed out, the way it works today, he does not think is fair, and I agree with him on that point. But eliminating it altogether is not an option, but making it more fair and equitable is an option.
I want to bring it back to Drew White. He is a just a person living in southwestern Ohio that we heard from at the beginning of the hour. And he talked about this big bill because he was uninsured and he had a surgery that cost him $111,000. And one of the most frustrating things for him was the hospital wouldn't itemize the bill. They just wouldn't, like, give him the laundry list of all the charges and how it added up to that. Do you think, I know that isn't directly addressed in this legislation in particular, but don't you think the hospital, like, if you're going to pay $100,000, don't you think you should get an itemized list of what you're going to be paying for and why?
Without question, I'd like to talk to that individual if you could connect him with us.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe it's an amendment we should consider adding to this bill before we potentially pass it out. But more important in the purpose of this bill, he should know going in what the estimate is, what the price is. And, you know, as you pointed out in your example earlier, you know, if something should change, here's our best guess at what we think the total price is going to be. That actually gives him the opportunity to shop around, and maybe he can get a better price somewhere else. Competition tends to increase quality of care and lower price all at the same time. We had not considered that, or I had not considered that. If you can connect him with my office, I would love to learn more about that. That seems like a real solid amendment that we should consider.
So finally, this argument that the bill has been gutted, you just disagree with the premise of the argument that's being made.
I disagree with the premise fully. I think the original bill would have gutted healthcare, which would ultimately have led to the unintended consequence of increasing the price for every citizen in the state of Ohio through the form of increased regulations and increased penalties. And I'm going to do my best not to allow that to happen.
That was Republican Senator George Lang. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, Anna. You have a beautiful day. Always good to talk to you.
And that'll do it for this hour of All Sides. Thanks for listening to 89.7 NPR News.